Radio.
You're listening to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast that explores the bold projects, exciting opportunities, and the growing reach of blockchain and cryptocurrency. Whether you've got skin in the game or you're just crypto curious, keep an open mind, enjoy the conversation, and stay CryptoCurrent. Now here's your host, Richard Carthon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of CryptoCurrent. Your host here, Richard Carthon. And today I got a special guest all the way out in San Francisco. We have Galen with Talon.io. How are you doing today?
Hey, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Glad you could join us. So how about we start off by, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us some background.
Sure. So I grew up pretty close to Silicon Valley, but kind of in the middle of nowhere. And I was, I guess, luckily, surrounded by lots of hackers and weirdos around the time of the first dot-com boom. So I started programming and experimenting with computers really young, and the people who I was close to were, you know, really care a lot about privacy and personal computing. So I was on the net really early on and experimenting with computers as a kid. I always liked making things, like drawing and, you know, making stuff by hand. So I studied architecture. I actually went to architecture school, and I've always worked on things that are kind of at the intersection of like design and technology. And I still am and probably will be for the rest of my life.
Awesome. Well, interesting, like with, you know, being early in the dot-com bubble, being able to see everything with computer science and where all that's headed. How did you get your first introduction into both cryptocurrency and blockchain?
The truth is, I actually can't remember. I remember following Bitcoin really early. I mean, 2009, 2010. But I wasn't, to be honest, it was interesting to me technically, because I'd even been aware of some of the early digital cash experiments and some of the early sort of cypherpunk technology stuff. So I always followed all of the blockchain stuff just because it was equally interesting to me, just as like BitTorrent or distributed hash tables and stuff. But I think when I actually just started to understand the importance of it was probably maybe 2012, 2013, when I saw how you could use sort of these sort of like privacy guaranteeing technologies locally on your computer alongside a blockchain, right? And so you could get, you know, I'm using something locally to pay you somewhere else, and this is totally trustless. Then I was like, okay, I think I actually get this. I guess, yeah, it's kind of the other way around, right? Like, I felt like I understood the technology before I actually understood why it mattered.
Right, which I think would be probably more important in the grand scheme of like where this is headed. All right, so appreciate you telling us about that. Tell us a little bit about how was your introduction into your company with Talon.io. What is it? How did you come up with it? And how did that kind of weave into your introduction into the blockchain and crypto space?
So my introduction to the blockchain and crypto space happened definitely before Talon or Urbit. So I spent most of my, you know, early 20s building sort of conventional web software. I basically supported myself throughout architecture school by building, you know, every possible thing I could get my hands on. And in doing that, I realized, okay, the conventional web stack is sort of not going to work for personal computing. And there was this very bleeding edge of new technologies around people building things for personal computing in the cloud and people building things like blockchains for people to be able to transact directly. So Talon is the main company building Urbit. We started it in 2013, and we've always kind of thought of it like the Bell Labs of Urbit, basically. Like, Talon is the company that does the primary sort of research and development of this platform. And as Urbit grows and matures, the idea is that we transition into being the ones who provide services, sort of like maybe WordPress.com or Red Hat, something like that.
Gotcha.
So it might be worth explaining a little bit how that even makes sense in an Urbit world, or we can dive right into, you know, what.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go for it.
So without going all the way into what Urbit is, it's based on a pretty simple idea, which is that the reason that huge platforms retain a monopoly on our apps and services. It's basically that the server side is too complicated for an ordinary person to run. So we knew that we need to build a new platform to replace like what these companies were controlling. And we knew that that would be really, really expensive. So we knew that platform has to be much simpler, and we knew it has to be decentralized. And so in this decentralized network, we thought, okay, one of the most important things is that we can ensure that strangers can trust each other a little bit. And one way to do that is to make an address on a new network cost something. So these things were kind of harmonized in the sense that, okay, well, if there's a finite number of addresses and they have a cost, then you can potentially use some of that value to, you know, pay for the research of building this new platform. So that's sort of how Tlon and Urbit have worked together over the years, right? So Tlon was granted a bunch of the address space in this new network, this new platform, and we've sold some of that address space to be able to fund developing this new thing. Does that make sense?
I got you. I think basically the research and development you would call Tlon, and then basically the application itself would be Urbit.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, on your website, it says that Urbit would be the last computer ever needed. Can you tell us a little bit more about like how that is the case and what it exactly is that you're trying to build that would be very beneficial for people to use?
Sure. Yeah, of course. The reason we say that Urbit is your last computer, which is both true and almost in a way sort of is clearly marketing or is almost funny in a way, but it's true in the sense that Urbit is designed to update itself forever and require basically no maintenance. And on top of that, Urbit is meant to be extended by anyone. So the thinking is, right, you know, if you have this platform that can be updated forever into the future, it requires no sort of system administration and people can build whatever they like on top, well, then you never have to switch apps and services and so on. Computer, of course, we mean in the abstract sense, and it's a virtual computer. It's not a piece of hardware. But let's back up and maybe explain what Urbit is from the top down. So like I said before, we live in this world where, you know, companies control the server side. So if we want to communicate or connect, we rely on, you know, we go through someone else. Like this call is going through a third party. And even in the crypto world, we rely for the most part on an exchange or a custody solution. So like if I want to send Bitcoin to you, I log into Coinbase and I send you Bitcoin. And
right.
I like Coinbase. They seem like a good company. But at the end of the day, from the Urbit perspective, what they're doing is just running server-side software. So Urbit is a new software stack that's designed to make the server side simple enough that an individual can actually run it themselves. So in an Urbit world, everyone runs their own Urbit node that's secure and private to them, and people communicate peer-to-peer. So from a user standpoint, this means that you can bring all of your ways of communicating, ways of collaborating into one like integrated OS that you can log into from anywhere, at first through any web browser, and in the long run, definitely like you could run it, you know, locally on a piece of hardware. And you'd use this OS to chat, share documents and files, send money, manage tasks, and so on and so forth. The closest thing we have to this that even exists in the world today really is WeChat, which is sort of China's answer to Facebook. WeChat is much more multimodal. You can do lots of different things with it. And we tend to look to WeChat as like the example of maybe where Urbit can go in the long run. Another way to think about it is like the current internet's really good at being like TV, right? It's good at basically delivering content to followers or subscribers, but it's less and less, I think, good at being a two-way communication mechanism, right? In order for us to keep in touch, we all have 17 messaging apps. We have all these different tools for collaboration, and they don't really work all that well together. Urbit today is really still young. We call it basically a version zero. And early next year, we'll release what we call OS1. So sort of the first preview of what I'm talking about here is kind of like an integrated system where people can chat, share documents, and actually kind of work together all in one place. Super minimalist, super stripped down. But of course you own it. It's secure and private to you. You run it yourself. It gives really good guarantees, in ways that, you know, no existing platform really can.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for explaining that a little bit further. So basically an all-inclusive place where you can build and create and use all of the technology without having to really go to a lot of other places to accomplish that.
Right. Yeah. So at this stage, I think like Urbit is exciting to people who want to, you know, experiment with a totally new system, try extending Urbit in different ways, building on top of it, adding sort of modules to it. And for people who want to build new communities, Urbit today is really feels like, you know, IRC in the 90s or like the early internet. You know, part of the fun in the sort of medium term is also that Urbit's really good at calling out to a blockchain. So in the Coinbase example, you know, if you want to send money peer-to-peer, there are some good wallet solutions. But if you want to do anything that's a little bit more complicated than that, that requires some programming, Urbit's a great platform for it.
Gotcha. Well, again, sounds like a really cool platform. And you said that version one should be coming out pretty soon that people can start developing and trying out?
That's right. So if you're if you're someone who is, you know, an experienced developer or you have some technical knowledge, Urbit's open source. It's on GitHub. You can go check it out, install it, get on the network. It's still rough around the edges, but we leave it open for anyone to play with. Early next year, yeah, we'll release what we call version one, and we'll be sort of inviting communities to try out, you know, using Urbit to maybe sort of like homestead, right? Urbit at this point, I think, is still a little bit like camping. It's not quite like living in a house, but if you're someone who wants to venture out there, we're happy to try and support you. We're looking for people's feedback early next year. And over the course of next year, I guess, where Urbit will really mature into, we'll be inviting more and more people onto the network to actually use it in earnest.
Gotcha. Well, good deal, man. Well, one of the things I like to ask people with everything that's going on, and thank you for the invitation for everyone who wants to go and explore Urbit and where it's headed. But, you know, what are some other things that are within both the crypto and blockchain space, some projects that you're watching right now?
Good question. Yeah, as you can tell, we're kind of like, you know, we overlap with the crypto and blockchain space because when you own your Urbit, you own it like you own Bitcoin, you own it cryptographically, but we're not a currency. So anyway, we have kind of like a funny relationship to the rest of crypto. I'd say that the thing I'm actually find myself being increasingly excited about, maybe this is weird, is actually Bitcoin. I feel like after 2017, it's been nice to see Bitcoin emerge as this kind of stable asset. It's actually sort of safe in a way that I am really happy to see. But of course, it's kind of boring answer. The two projects I think that I'm like really, that I follow not super closely, but I'm very curious to see how it works out are basically Cosmos and Dfinity, both of which seem to have really promising technical teams and interesting sort of value propositions. And I'm really curious to see how it works out and, you know, what they can come up with, especially over the next year or so.
For sure. And thanks for putting that on everyone's horizon. But yeah, man, more than anything, really appreciate your time today. Thank you for explaining your projects and everything that's going along with it. But what is a final thought that you'd like to leave with all of our listeners today?
The main thing I'd leave with probably like the audience of people that you guys are, you know, to your listeners really, is just that, you know, cryptocurrency and blockchains are amazing. But in order for them to really work, it's really important that we have tools to interact with them that we can actually trust and control. So obviously, you know, I think of Urbit being one of those things, but I guess I just always encourage people who have caught the bug because they care about the currency element or the sort of financial side to remember, like, you need a computer to interact with these things. You need some place that you can interact with them from. And this is an open problem and people are working on it. It's going to take some time, but it's a super important kind of complement to this whole world.
No doubt. And we got to be able to get to the future that we want, and we need very good infrastructure to be able to get that. And it sounds like y'all are working towards building that kind of infrastructure. So we appreciate that. And what are some different ways that people can connect with you and learn more about your various companies?
So the sort of center of the project, I guess, is really at urbit.org. You can go to our website. You can also certainly follow us on Twitter at Urbit. There's another company that is developing some Urbit-related infrastructure, which is also where you can buy an Urbit address, and they do a great job of supporting people. They're called urbit.live. I'd say those are probably the best starting points.
Perfect. Well, again, Galen, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit more about Tlon, Urbit, and all the amazing infrastructural things that you're building. And for everyone listening, stay cryptocurrent.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Cryptocurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency. You'll receive daily emails Monday through Friday that are personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence. Are you an accredited investor looking to invest in cryptocurrency? Crescent City Capital can help. Go to crescentcitycapital.com for more information. If you're finding value in our content, please take 5 minutes to leave a 5-star review and a great comment. Also, please make sure to share this podcast with others. Hello, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the quality of this podcast. I can only thank my amazing producer, Andrew DeRitter, with DeRitter Productions, who has put this together. If you have any podcast, visual, or video needs, please go to DeRitterProductions.com. That's DERITTER Productions.com.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Cryptocurrent with Richard Carthon. We'll be back with more exciting developments from the world of blockchain and cryptocurrency next week. But until then, stay cryptocurrent.
Exits now.